And welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakraborty.
And I'm Doug Traboob. These days, you can get almost anything with the touch of a button or a tap of a screen.
Dry cleaning, pickup and delivery? Check.
Someone to clean your house? Check.
A ride home from work? Check.
On-demand services are fast, convenient, and, no surprise, popular.
But one Boston attorney argues that the services are coming at a cost, often to the workers.
Shannon Liss Reardon is suing on-demand companies including Uber and HomeJoy for allegedly violating labor laws. She says they are misclassifying workers by calling them independent contractors when they're actually employees who are owed benefits. And she's done it before. On behalf of workers, Liss Reardon has successfully sued Starbucks, FedEx, and other companies for millions of dollars. Shannon Liss Reardon joins us now. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you lay out the case for us? Give us a sense of what your view of Uber drivers are and why they are employees and not contractors.
Well, Uber, like many companies, has a band of workers who it controls, who it has performing the services that it's selling to the public. And it's been using this model where it does not acknowledge that these workers are employees or should have any of the benefits that employees have, the right to be protected by the wage laws, to get workers' comp if they get injured on the job, get unemployment if they lose their job, or any other of the myriad protections that employees have. Now, Uber tries to argue. It's made a number of arguments in the case I brought against it that the court's already rejected. It's tried to claim that, oh, it's not a car service, it's a technology company. And the federal court judge has already rejected that argument, saying, no, it's a car service. I've seen many companies in a lot of different industries try to distance itself from the workers who are performing the service that make the company what it is by denying that they are in the business of doing what they obviously do. So that's just one of the reasons. The laws as to whether a worker is an employee or an independent contractor vary somewhat around the country, but most of the laws, other than in Massachusetts, look most significantly at the right of control. How much control does the company have over the workers? And we've developed evidence in the case, I think it's clear to anyone who's used the service, that Uber has a lot of control over these drivers. They set the standards, they have a list of things they expect them to do. They want them to be playing soft jazz or NPR when they're driving customers in their car. Because what Uber's trying to do, like other companies of this sort, is they want to provide a consistent quality service to the public. And really, the only way you can provide, I think, that kind of quality service is to have rules and to enforce them and to have the people providing the service be under your control. So the big issue that we're litigating in this case has to do with how much control does Uber have over the drivers, and I think the control is quite substantial, and the drivers should get the protections of employees.
I want to note that we did reach out to Uber, which declined to comment on the specifics of this case, but a spokesman did give us a statement, quote, Uber will vigorously defend the rights of riders to enjoy competition and choice and for drivers to build their own small businesses. And I also want to welcome our listeners to join this conversation. I'm sure there are a lot of Uber drivers out there in our audience. If you're an Uber driver, call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK and tell us about your experiences. And we also want to hear from consumers who have used the service. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, or share your comments on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So it seems like people are voting with their fingers, right? They're tapping. These are hugely popular services. They're widely used, and they're also widely used in the sense that these workers, these drivers, are signing up in by the thousands to do it. Is there something that we're missing here? Is popularity not a strong suit, even though it seems popular on both sides?
Well, yes. I know Uber has been wildly popular. It's really brought this convenient model to the public of as a way to catch a ride that you know is going to be there and you can get at the tap of the button. In the case, we're not saying there's anything wrong with that. What we're saying is that under the laws, the way Uber is structured, the drivers who are providing the service, who are available there for you at the tap of a button, they're employees and they deserve to have the rights of employees. Now, we're not saying, I'm not trying to break down Uber's business model. I'm not trying to put them out of business or say they can't exist. Uber is a $40 billion company. What we're saying is that they should be held accountable to the same laws that all other businesses are required to follow. They can afford to cover workers' comp for their drivers. They can afford to ensure that the drivers who are out there are getting at least minimum wage, are getting overtime when they work more than 40 hours a week, and that they should be reimbursed for the expenses that they have to pay in order to provide the service, their gas, their car maintenance, insurance. Uber, like other companies that designate their workers as independent contractors, has effectively shifted the costs of running a business from this $40 billion company to the workers. We're just saying that they shouldn't be allowed to do that, that they should have to abide by the same laws that their competitors have to abide by, and which would even the playing field, promote the protections of employees, and still can provide the public with this great service that everyone has come to love, as long as they play within the rules.
But isn't Uber sort of evening the playing field against the institution of taxi cabs and the institution of car services? I mean, at some level, how many playing fields can we level in the, you know, person delivery business?
Well, I mean, one way of looking at it is that they're leveling the playing field. Another way of looking at it is that they are leading a race to the bottom. No one is right now regulating the prices that Uber charges, and Uber's been slashing their prices again and again and again in order to corner the market. Who is hurt by that? Well, obviously, consumers love it because they're getting these cheap rides. What's happening to the drivers who have to pay for their own gas, their own wear and tear on their vehicles, their own insurance? When these rates keep getting cut, the drivers are getting hurt, and there's no guarantee that they're even getting minimum wage after you account for all of these expenses. So I think it's very concerning that Uber is out there doing whatever it wants to do with really no limitations. It hasn't been following the rules. Now, one of the arguments is that, well, it just, you know, it would be so costly for them to have to provide all these protections. I mean, think about it. Right now, the way it works is Uber generally takes about 20% of every fare, you know, give or take, and it varies somewhat by city. So maybe it would cost Uber more to provide these protections. You know, there's nothing in Stolen saying they can only take 20%. If they have to take a bigger share of the fare in order to cover their overhead, they're perfectly free to do that. If it's, say, 30% or 40%, I don't know what it would be. They might argue, oh, well, drivers won't want to drive for us if we take a bigger share. But you know what? They are taking a bigger share because those drivers are not getting worker protections. They're not getting protected by workers' comp or by unemployment or, like I said, minimum wage or overtime or being reimbursed for their expenses. The drivers are paying those costs. If it were to change so that Uber just took a bigger share in order to cover those costs, I think it would make it more transparent for everyone what the company is paying and what the drivers are expected to pay.
So I want to ask you more about that sort of relationship. And I should say that my guest is Shannon Liss Reardon. You're listening to Radio Boston, and we're talking about whether on-demand services like Uber are taking advantage of their employees by calling them independent contractors rather than employees of the company. I want to ask you about, we've obviously found that there is a role for independent contractors in society. So if I hire a plumber to come to my house, there's some level of agreement there. He will come in, he'll fix my faucet, presumably not damage my house or steal things from it. And so there's some, you know, implied and explicit agreement. I have to tell him what to do in order to get what I want done. So, but how is that different? I don't incur costs to him per se.
Right. Well, the plumber coming to your house to fix your pipes is the classic example of an independent contractor relationship. It's usually for a discrete job. you have something that's broken, you need someone to have it fixed. You and he or you and she will negotiate the terms of that transaction, what he'll charge, what you'll pay. You explain the end product that you want to have complete. You want your pipe fixed, and he or she fixes it. The situation we have with Uber and these other so-called on-demand companies is nothing like that. You have a company that is setting the standard and the rules for what these drivers are to do. You have an ongoing employment relationship where the drivers are working, you know, not just for one ride, over time. There are people who are doing this either as full-time employment or part-time employment. And, you know, they're not just being told what the end result should be. They're being told how to go about doing it. So it's most importantly, also, they're not setting their own rates. Uber decides how much gets charged. Uber is collecting the money from the passengers and then distributing to the drivers their share. This looks nothing like the classic plumber who comes to your house and is an independent contractor situation.
Listeners, you can join our conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Gene is calling from Brockton. Gene, I understand you're an Uber driver. Tell us about your experience.
Yes, well, at first the experience was good when they started. And, you know, as you know, they call us partners. You know, independent contractors, of course, and they put us in a situation where they offered us cars, you know, to drive for them. And for example, I have an Avalon that's costing me about $271 a week. The car is a $35,000 car, but with the at that rate, the cost of the car ends up after 4 years to be $78,000.
Gene, do you have another job, or do you drive?
I do Uber full time. I used to drive 6 to 8 hours. Now I have to drive 8 to 13 hours to make the same amount of money
per day.
When they first cut their rates last August, it's like a $500 pay cut every week.
What's your response to that caller, Shannon?
Yeah, I'm getting lots and lots of calls from Uber drivers expressing what this caller just said from around the country. I mean, the drivers are not their own independent business people. They're at Uber's mercy. They're getting paid based on what Uber decides to charge and based on what portion Uber decides to take out of the fare and what to distribute to the drivers. And there are many, many drivers, like we just heard from, who are doing this as their full-time occupation to feed themselves and their families. One question I get asked about a lot is, well, isn't this, you know, such a benefit to people who just need a little cash in their spare time? They're not looking to drive for Uber or work for one of these companies as their full-time job. They're just looking at it as a gig. And my response to that is, you know, there are plenty of jobs out there that are part-time. And there are plenty of employees who are surviving in this economy by stringing together different part-time jobs. There's nothing about being part-time as opposed to full-time that makes someone an employee versus an independent contractor. And I'll also just note another argument that I hear a lot as well. Isn't it great that the drivers get to pick their own hours and work whenever they want, work when it's convenient for them? And I would agree, yes, flexibility in a job is a great thing. And more employers are providing that benefit to their employees. So the mere fact that you can work whenever you want, as much or as little as you want, that doesn't make you an independent contractor. The issue under the laws of most states is how much control does the company have over you while you're working.
Let's take another call. Tim is calling from Foxborough. Tim, you're an Uber customer?
Yes, I am.
So tell us about your view of it.
Well, you know, I will agree. I could see how there could be potential for abuse here, but I mean, the drivers that I've had the opportunity to speak to and with, I mean, they seem to do this as a second job. They seem to be, you know, very positive about the money that they're making on it. I will say the last caller's comment about Uber renting the car was something I'd never heard before. So, the show has been very informative. I mean, however, I mean, you do see drivers that are working, you know, at the same time for Lyft and Uber at the same time. I mean, you look at taxi drivers. I mean, taxi drivers, are they really getting all these benefits? When you talk to taxi drivers and they're paying an inordinate amount of money to rent the cab and the medallion and whatever it may be, whereas, and they're fixed, they're locked in week by week, whereas an Uber driver decides, I mean, they, you know, when they want to work, if they, you know, at what schedule they want to work fits their needs. And, you know, I hear her comment about the part-time job. You know, you could go out and get a part-time job, and there is some flexibility in schedule. There really isn't that level of flexibility that you would have being an Uber driver. I can hear just a little bit more about, people make the choice to be an Uber driver knowing that this is sort of the, you know, the way it works. I mean, you go out, you work when you want to work, and you make money based on that. You are, of course, at the mercy of the company. But, I mean, if Uber was to take more money out, wouldn't that, too, be coming right out of the driver's pocket?
Tim, thanks a lot for your call. And Tim raises the issue a little bit earlier in his comments about the idea of taxi drivers who are fronting a lot of cash. And I want to kind of turn to that. You had a recent case in front of the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts. They ruled that three taxi fleet owners were right to classify their drivers as independent contractors instead of employees. You were representing the drivers who lease the cabs from these companies for their shifts. So what is the difference in that case and the case that we're talking about now?
Sure. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of questions about that. First of all, I have to say that that decision that just came out from the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court is, frankly, one of the most surprising and shocking and disappointing decisions I've experienced in my legal career. When the SJC ruled that taxi drivers in Boston can lawfully be classified as independent contractors, I was very, very disappointed in that decision. The court was very clear that they limited it to the rather unique facts of the taxi industry in Boston. But in any event, their reasoning, I think very clearly does not apply to Uber for various reasons. One of them being that they note, again, I don't agree with this reasoning, but this is what the SJC has said, that because the taxi drivers pay a fixed amount per either shift or week or sometimes month, their interest and the interest of the taxi companies or the medallion owners is not perfectly aligned because the companies receive their payments regardless of how much business there is. That was actually one of my arguments as to why the drivers shouldn't be on the hook for this and they were taking all the risk. But anyway, in contrast, though, the court actually distinguished the situation of, well, if a company is taking an actual share of every ride, its interests are more aligned with that of the drivers, which is exactly what we see here in the Uber case. And so the argument here is that the drivers are in the same business. They're in the performing services in the usual course of Uber's business, and the fact that Uber is taking a share of every ride means that Uber's business grows as more drivers have rides. And so in that way, the decision is distinguishable. And the court also noted the multitude of companies that are involved in the Boston taxi industry. You've got medallion owners, radio associations, medallion management companies, and the drivers. And based on there being all these different types of companies, the court found that no one was really misclassifying anyone. Whereas in the case of Uber, you've got this one company that's running the show, that's calling the shots, it's making the money, it's making the rules. So as disappointed as I am in that SJC decision, it really is not going to have any bearing on the Uber case.
I'd like to get one more call in. Jerry is calling from Weymouth. Jerry, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. As I listen to Shannon, it's as if she's sitting the solution and their thought right in, in controlling the drivers. I think Uber is a great ride service. I drove ITOA taxi 40 years ago. You had to rent the taxi then for $100 for a 12-hour shift. Right now, the Uber drivers do quite well. They can hustle. The idea that the fears are being narrowed and squeezing the driver, I don't get it. I'm not sure she's hearing drivers. When I take an Uber cab, a car ride, they're telling me it's fabulous. They're constantly got radio, have work.
Jerry, I'm going to stop you there because we're running short on time, but I think we hear your point, and I'd like to give Shannon a chance to respond to it.
Yeah, once again, and I'm hearing from drivers all over the country, and many of them, they love the flexibility. They love the fact that they can make money in their spare time. I don't deny that at all. The question is, you know, should they be getting the rights of employees or not? But another thing that I just want to point out is Uber drivers have an incentive to put on a very good face for the passengers, and that's for a very important reason. They get a ranking at the end of every ride. Customers are asked to rate their drivers on a 5-point scale, and I don't know how much of the public is aware that unless they keep up a rating of very close to 5, sometimes 4.8, 4.7, 4.6, they could be deactivated. So they could lose their job. So Uber drivers are not likely to be complaining about their situation to passengers because passengers don't like to hear that. They might give them a poor rating. So you might think about that when you get into an Uber car.
Shannon Liss Reardon is a Boston employment attorney. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, smartphones, ebooks, and Bluetooth toothbrushes, a look at the useful and useless things the internet has enabled over the past 20 years, and what we can expect next. I'm Doug Tribou with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.